Hey, Reggie, what's going on, sir? We all set? Oh, what are you pointing to my throat? Yeah, my voice looks, it feels good now. Yeah, I don't sense any hoarseness or straining at all. It was, I had a cold for a good 4 or 5 days, though. It's clogged and things like that, but we're back to normal. I have a strong immune system. Even when it gets, a little weakened at times, it bounces back fairly quick. All right, are we ready to go? So am I. I'll give you the three S's and the countdown. Give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. How's that? I like where the levels are. Keep them right there. We are at, 357? Podcast number 357. And this, we're almost in April, aren't we? Will this one post? This one will post. No, it won't post. No, it'll be still March, but we're almost there. We're almost close to our the anniversary back in May of 2016. My God, 7 years it'll be. All right, ready to go? Here we go. Star, smile strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. No, I didn't like that one. Yeah, I know the last time we did it last week, it hit right away on the second one, which just sounded really good, but that was lucky, wasn't it? Yeah. Let's try it again. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, just listening. No, that doesn't cut it. You got to get out there. Taking it to the streets, my friends. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion, oh, I can't tell you what it does to the insides of my aorta and my veins of my heart. Oh, it just soothes me. If you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, hit the prompt for this podcast. Well, first hit the podcast prompt, then hit the prompt for this podcast, and my God, you will just be inundated with podcast after podcast after podcast. Just keep scrolling down, scrolling down, scrolling down. Get up to date. Find out where we were so you know where we're going. My latest tally tells me this is episode number 357. So as we continue, some recollections. My audio version of my home movies of our vacation. It's an audio version of home movies, if you will. Talked a little bit about my recent trip to the Middle East, to Israel and Egypt, and talked about what was the impetus or the motivation of going to see that. Last week, talked about some interesting things that happened in Israel. And I thought I would talk a little bit about some of the interesting things that that happened in Egypt as well. As I've said, the great thing about vacations, and you would know that I said this, if you would do as I recommend and you go back and listen to previous podcasts. If you haven't heard the last two podcasts, which I've been talking about my vacation, then, you know, you might want to go listen to those two first to get yourself up to date with this one. This is a little listener's guide for you here today. If you've been along for the ride, if you've been along for the ride, then here we go. We're out of Israel and into Egypt. I didn't tell you, though, on the day we were leaving for Egypt from Israel, we had to leave our room at like 2:30 in the morning. We had a very early flight, and obviously we get to the airport, blah, blah, blah. So we had to leave our hotel at 2:30. And once again, I was telling you about a couple of podcasts ago. I've actually done three now. I forgot about that. This is the fourth one, and this probably will be the last one. So, but I really feel like I want to share some of this experience, because it really was a very transformational, in many ways, trip. It's a kind of a once in a lifetime thing, and I really came away with some new ideas and appreciations for this, and more of an awareness of the entire Middle East. I didn't go to the entire Middle East, but just being in there, it's hard not to to come away with some memories and some thought-provoking experiences and ideas to change the way that maybe you thought about a certain place. That's what I love about traveling so much, because you do get to learn, not only see the sights, but hopefully you get to learn a little bit about the country. You walk the streets, you talk to some people, you get a vibe and a sense of the place, and you get a total new awareness and appreciation of different people and different lands. It's much different and much more impactful and influential when you're visiting and you're there, as opposed to perhaps reading books or looking at magazines or watching television travel shows or hearing from other people. But I'm trying my best to recreate some of the experiences that we had. So I said a couple of podcasts ago how I enjoy being Mr. Organized Travel Guy. And I got I sort of lost my reputation for that with a small snafu with boarding passes for my wife. But this one could have been major. And this is one of those things that when it happens, it hits you, and then you go, oh, my gosh, thank God, and then you move on. But I've been thinking about this more and more, like, what would I have done? And so 3 a.m., and, you know, we have to get out of the room and everything, and we're packing, and we're getting ready to go, and, you know, you do that last sweep of the room, you know? You check under the beds, you go back in the bathroom, and you make sure you've taken all your toiletries and things, and you go through that last look through all the drawers to make sure you didn't leave anything in there, and every little nook and cranny, all the different drawers and the little spaces that are in a hotel room there you could put clothes or sunglasses or whatever. And I'm usually done with getting ready in terms of being dressed and packed and everything before my wife. It's part of being the organized travel guy. That's part of what goes into that, of being the organized travel guy, is that you are organized. And so I'm always packing, you know, the night before, hours before, and leaving out just what I need, and it's all laid out on a chair somewhere. Here's the clothes I'm going to wear, the socks, the shoes, it's all there. Get together all your travel information. That is certainly important when you're in a foreign country. Make sure you've got your passport and all your documents and all your itinerary, and maybe you have some boarding passes already. I told you I have my official travel portfolio envelope that helps to identify me as Mr. Organized Travel Guy. So all that's all, you know, go into that bad little safe that's in the closet, you know, with your little code number there. And they always tell you, make sure put your hand all the way in the back, on the bottom and in the back. So I did that. You know what kills me about that little safe that's in the thing? They always put a piece of fabric or carpet, almost carpeting, on the bottom. And I get that, because maybe people put valuables, maybe perhaps jewelry, and you don't want to put that on metal, something that could be scratched, could be jewelry, could be other things. So they put this nice piece of felt or even like carpeting or some kind of a material so that it's cushioned, which makes sense. On the other side of the coin, though, what's bad about that is that things can get stuck to that. And especially that's what they always say, put your hand all the way in the back, because if you fill that thing up, it's always dark in that safe. It's kind of sometimes it's too high or too low. You don't have a good vantage point to see, so you're basically feeling around in there. I don't know why they do that. It should be eye level. And you say, well, Jim, what's eye level, right? I mean, somebody that, you know, what's eye level? So I get that. But many times it's very low. And I don't think, you know, 3-foot children are using the safe. So I think it would be safe, no pun intended, to maybe put it at 5'3" or 5'4". Even if you're 6 foot, you know, a woman can look into it. Most women are between maybe, you know, 5 feet, 5'7", 5'8". There's some taller women, obviously. But I'm just saying, to try to be average, the average height of a man is about 5'9", 5'10". So, you know, obviously there's some men that are 6'5", 6'7", okay. But you want to try at least, don't put it 3 feet. That's where 6-year-olds are. I don't think they're using the safe. But anyway, but I went through that, got all that done, all set. I'm sitting in one of the chairs, and I'm just waiting now. It's time, we're going to leave in about 5 minutes or so, or 10 minutes, and waiting for my wife to get ready. I'm all packed. Bags are at the door. I've got everything all set. I've got my phone, you know, right next to me here. I'm kind of just paging through it to kill some time. TV is off. Bed is not made. But, oh, I mean, when I leave a room, whether it's for the day or even when we actually check out, I would love to just be the maid or whoever comes in. I don't know. Is maid can we even say maid anymore? I don't know. Is that a wrong term? The chambermaid? I don't know what you call them anymore. You know, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything here, but whoever comes in to prepare the room for the next guest, how's that? they have to walk in. I mean, certainly they have to clean things and they have to change the sheets and all that. But you know, I've been in some people's rooms where it looks like a disaster area hit. You know, when I leave a room, I don't make the bed because I'm sure that they change the sheets. I hope they do. But at the very least, I mean, I don't just leave all the covers all in a big ball rolled up, you know, and the pillows all askew. I even out the bedspread or the duvet or whatever is they're using, and I put the pillows back in order, you know, straight. If there's two of them, one on top of the other on each side, if it's a bigger bed. You know, and I clean out, you know, all the dressers are done. If I have to rearrange, like, say, the little desk in there to make room for things, I put it back the way it was. If I have to move a tea tray or the little books that they have about the hotel, you put those away somewhere if you had to put a computer on that desk or use it. But when I leave, I return everything to the way it looked. And even in the bathroom, I mean, obviously they're going to have to clean the bathroom, but I throw out all the used soap. I throw out the used shampoo. So all that stuff that's there, you know, all the towels are in a bunch. They're all together and they're either in the tub or they're in the shower in a big pile. So they're easy to get to. They're not all over the floor in different spots. The floor, and at the very least, I even wipe off the counter of the vanity in the bathroom. You know, when you're washing and you're shaving and you're doing everything, you know, water gets on there. Before we leave, I take a towel and I wipe that. I wipe that off in the bathroom. Oh, yes. All the towels and the bath mat in a pile, in the shower, or if there's a tub, in the tub. So they're all in one spot, easy to get to. The floor isn't wet. If I see some wet floor from the shower, whatever, wipe that up. Oh, yeah. When I mean, they're going to have to clean it anyway. I get it. But at least they don't have to start, you know, eight layers before they get to actually. They can come right in and just, okay, I can start cleaning as opposed to first removing all this mess and then cleaning. So, yeah, that's part of being an organized travel guy. So I pride myself on being so organized and having all this thing. So I'm waiting for my wife patiently, or my version of patiently. and I'm just kind of scrolling on my phone. Yes, look at me. Didn't have year and a half ago, never even had a smartphone. Now I sit there and scroll. Look at me. Like a pro, like I've been doing it for 15 years. And there's a knock on the door because they had asked us, or, you know, if we'd like, you could put your bags outside of the room and they will be taken down to the lobby and to the bus. I'm not keen on that. I don't like the fact, I don't think anyone's going to open your bag, but you know, you put them out at 3 a.m. Who's in the hallways watching the hallways at 3 a.m? So I was like, you know what? We had a room right near, very convenient, near the elevator. I said, you know what? This way we don't have to rush because they always want those bags like a half hour before you're going to leave. So I said, you know what? We have to go down there. This way my wife could take her time as well, even though my bags were ready, Mr. Organized Travel Guy. So I said, you know what, we'll just take them down ourselves. Don't worry about it. So the guy knocks on the door. Oh, do you have bags? So I get up and I said, no, we're fine. You know, we're fine. We'll take them down. And he says, oh, are you sure? Yeah. Okay. So, and it's almost time to go down anyway. I was surprised. He was a little late. He was late. If he was supposed to take those bags, they're supposed to be there about a half hour before. So kind of surprised me that he would be knocking, but maybe he just figured, he knew the rooms probably that would be checking out at that time. So it was nice that he came, but, we said no. Now, who knows if this would have happened if he had not knocked on the door, right? So this could be a chicken and egg kind of thing, but thankfully, this worked out because this could have been a very, very major, not just an inconvenience, but a problem. So in the flurry, and notice how I'm always providing you with a reason for my lapse. My lapses as being Mr. Organized Travel Guy. I'm scrolling on my phone and then knock on the door. So I put the phone down on the little table next to the chair and I go to answer the door, blah, 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 no. So he leaves and now we're almost done. We're ready to go anyway. It was getting close. You know, that's probably why he was checking. And so I'm like, well, okay, let's go. My wife's all ready. She zips up the last of the bags, brings it down, you know, takes off the bed. I've got mine already waiting at the door. And I do just a very cursory quick look with the eyes. Everything's gone, but I know I've checked everything. You know, before I sat down to scroll, I did the once over. I went on the floor, looked under the bed, looked under the desk, looked in all the drawers, looked in all the closets, looked in the safe. I did all those checklist things. There's nothing left to be done. I was very confident of that. So, you know, but before you leave, you give one last look and then you shut the lights out. I open up the curtains. So when the maid comes in, it's wide open for them. You know, the sun is there. Oh, it's as if, you know, it's almost like they're coming into a clean room. I feel for the people that have to clean these rooms. I would love to be there to have them just go, oh, Boy, was that nice. So I walk out, and so now we're waiting in the lobby for all the people on our group to come down and get ready to go on the bus and leave. And I'm just sitting there, and we're talking to people, and we have our bags, and all of a sudden, the bellman that went up to our room to ask if we wanted our bags taken down, he comes down, and I can see him looking around, and he sees me, and he says, is this your phone? And I'm like, oof, and I'm checking around, and sure enough, it was my phone. I left my phone, not in San Francisco. I left my phone. You know, when I was scrolling, he knocked on the door. I put it on the small little table next to one of the little comfy chairs, and those chairs have a high armrest, so that little table is always very low. And so I put it down, and then we were in the hustle and bustle of the guy saying no, and it's time to go. I didn't really go back to that chair again. I stayed in the hallway and said, well, let's just get going now. So I never went back to that chair for that final look through. I did a cursory look from halfway in, but I didn't go way into the room. Always got to, I remember that now, go way in. Now, I don't know why at 3 a.m., why was he in the room? I mean, my gosh, I thankfully, for some reason, he came back to the room to check the room. Thank God. I don't know why he did that, if that's what they do. I told you on a previous podcast that this was a very nice hotel, the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. It's like the hotel. Princes stay there. So maybe this is part of their, because certainly the maids were not walking around fixing the rooms at 3 a.m. Everybody's sleeping. So I don't know if it was this bellman's initiative or that's part of what they do when people leave. Before they leave, they check the rooms. I don't know, but thank God that he went in there and saw my phone. Because at 3 a.m., I mean, we were getting on the bus. We'd be on our way to Tel Aviv, to the airport, and then who knows how I would have gotten that. Even if they found it, even if they realized it was mine, even if I called from Egypt or called from the airport to say, hey, how would I get it? I mean, we had a few hours, but you know, would they drive it to the airport? I don't think so. And my gosh, in today's world, without your cell, I mean, you know, it's great, the abilities of the smartphone, but it does carry a lot of our information. I do have that little wallet portfolio thing, and I always do have backups on hard, on paper, hard copy things, but some things are just email to you, and you got to use and show that, and wow. Whew. And at the time, I mean, I you know, gave the guy a couple of bucks. Thank you so much. I mean, and I didn't really, I mean, I was like doing those, oh my, oh, thank God. And blah, 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 you know. But in retrospect, oh my gosh, that would have been horrendous. Whew. So thankfully, everything worked out, but that would have really been another kind of, oh, and another check mark against my organized travel guy reputation. I don't know. I'm going to have to work on that. I mean, now as I even say this out loud, I don't know. I was still, I mean, I would say, you know, for the, you know, it was 16 days. I was pretty well organized, as I usually am. But between giving my wife the wrong boarding pass when we were leaving, when we were leaving Israel to go to Egypt, and then, or no, I think it was Cairo to Luxor, and then I would have left my smartphone in Israel. I mean, by all rights, I should have. We should have been out of the airport, out of the hotel, on the bus and to the airport before anyone found that thing. By the time they clean up the rooms, probably at 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock, we would already been in Egypt, having left that hotel at 3, and someone came in there at 6 or 7 or 8 to really clean the room up. So, oh, I don't know why he did it, but wow. Thankfully, he did that. But I've been talking about Israel, Egypt throughout, and, you know, some of the sites that I had seen and why I wanted to see them, and some of these amazing sites, and how you are just, you're just awestruck when you see, especially in Egypt, so many of these sites, the Great Pyramids, so many of these temples with the carvings and the paintings and the tombs, Valley of the Kings, Valley of the Queens, the temples at Abu Simbel and Karnak Temple, Luxor Temple, Edfu, just so many. I don't want to be redundant, but they really are just awe-inspiring. And you look at these and you can't imagine how the heck they were built. And I will come away, and I still, even when I look at the pictures, I can't believe, you know, when I was there and I saw them, and I, you know, it's really what it's really done is really opened my mind to wonder, you know, about knowledge. Like, why isn't knowledge passed on from civilization to civilization? And was it a lost civilization? There's a lot of questions that have kind of come into my mind when you see these things in person. And I would just have to say to you that there's only so much that I can express to you by describing it. And there's another part that some of these things just have to be seen to be believed. And I hope that all of you, if you have an inclination to see any of these things, I hope you get a chance to do it. I guarantee you, you will be changed. You will be transformed. You will have a different viewpoint on the ancient civilizations of Egypt and Israel. They are that awe-inspiring and majestic and just baffling. What I loved most about the trip is it was a mix of history and mystery. It really was. That's exactly the way I would describe it. History and mystery, because it's loaded with history of these structures and these sites and everything, from 5,000 years ago. And then there's the mystery of them in Egypt. How were they built? How are they still standing? In Israel, the religious sites, are these the real places? And if they are, did these things really happen? You're constantly confronted with both proof and questions. You know, circumstantial evidence, but nothing definitive. We see them here. They're there. They're here somewhere, but how were they built? And even the religious sites. This is where this was supposed to have happened. Well, now it's one thing to read about it and be schooled on it and taught about it. But when you go to the country and say, okay, well, this is supposedly where this happened, where perhaps Jesus walked down the street when he was carrying the cross, or this is where he was crucified, or this is where he was born. I mean, these are sites, as I said many times, that have been accepted. But then you go, okay, I'm seeing this, but then is it? So that's what made this trip so fascinating and different than many other trips. I've been to some places too, like in Rome and Pompeii and in ancient civilizations, Greek, where you've seen that. But these just, there's a different aspect to them, because they do go so far back, and they are just so momentous in many ways, figuratively and physically. So it was a, for me, it was a trip of history and mystery, and also fun. And here's the thing that I have to tell you about. Once again, can't plan for this on all the itineraries. Now, I should say, the story that I'm going to relate, I did have some knowledge of this, but I never would have expected it to have to be in reality what it really was. Being an avid traveler and someone who loves travel and learning about different things and going to different places, I do a lot of research about places that I think I might want to go to, or when I'm booked to go, I do a lot of research on what I need to see. And my wife makes jokes, but at the same, you know, oh my gosh, I got this list, because I really do my homework. That's another aspect of being an organized travel guy. When we go to a place, I mean, I make sure that we see what we should see, and then maybe some things that are off the beaten path, but I definitely make sure we see what we see. Many times I'll talk to people that have been to the same places that we have, and I'll say, well, did you go here? And they're like, wow, where, what? Huh, what? That's part of being organized travel guy. You've got to do your research. So I do my research online. I go to the library and get those travel books. Yes, I actually do have a library card. I'm one of the few that actually still goes to the library. I like going to the library. And I take out the travel books for different countries or cities and you know, just back that up then with other online research I might do. And we also watch the several travel shows on television. Longtime fan of Rick Steves on PBS. And he always does a nice mix of doing the main sites that you should see, as well as some of the lesser known things. And like I said, we've seen some other things thanks to Rick Steves that we never would have known even existed. And that other people go, wow, I didn't even know that was there. It's like, yeah, saw it on Rick Steves. So I do my homework, and so as luck would have it, it was maybe it's just once again one of those things that you don't pay attention to something until it's on your radar screen. But within 2 to 3 weeks before we were leaving in late January, there on the Rick Steves, you know, they always show reruns. He does, you know, he goes to the major cities around the world. By somewhat accident, you know, I'm channel surfing and it says, oh, Rick Steves, Europe, you know, Rick Steves, you know, what's he got? I saw the show that he did on Israel and the two shows he did, it was an hour special, on Egypt within 2 or 3 weeks before we're leaving. So it was a great way to add to the list or reinforce and see what he had to say. So it was very lucky, and we got a chance to watch those and we did. And so I always like to go to a place a little informed, you know, in terms of what, where things are and what things are. We were on a tour this time, so a lot of that stuff is done for you. But still, I like to go to any city or country with a little background information on some of the places that we're going to see and some of the history of it, just to, as I said before, to help immerse yourself and understand the city or the country that you're going to. So one of the cool things that they showed on the Rick Steves Egypt special was, and I think I was talking to you about the salespeople there in Egypt, very aggressive. You always have to walk through a market or a bazaar to get to a main thing. I mean, that's the way it is. And it's always there's a lot of bartering that goes on, and it's very aggressive, and it's part of the culture. I get it. I mentioned I'm not really a fan of it, but, you know, you partake a little when you have to. But this is something I've never seen. And we've been on several cruises around the world and in different areas, and I've never seen this. This was completely unique to Egypt. And we saw it first on the Rick Steves show. He's talking about, you know, because up the Nile, on the Nile, there's all different types of cruise ships and ships that are, there's day tour ships going up and down the Nile. There's, you know, river cruises like we were on. So there's a lot of ships going on the Nile in both directions, which then, of course, creates a captive audience for these aggressive salespeople, right? If they're aggressive on land, you know, okay, you know, some people might shop in the, and you know, might go to the markets and do some shopping, but people like me, I put my head down, and I didn't, like I said before, I didn't make eye contact in Egypt for 8 days. I put my head down and just walked through them. I wouldn't even stop to maybe even browse, because once you showed any interest at all, if your eyes moved towards something, they were on you. How much? How much? How much you want? How much you want? Come on, come on, come on, come on. When you think about it, the actual cruise ships and these many ships are, as I said, a captive audience, right? I mean, I can walk past the shops, but if I'm on a ship, where am I going to go, right? So kind of a captive audience. Once again, I didn't appreciate or enjoy the experience all that much, but I have to give them A plus for ingenuity, tenacity, and moxie, and innovation, no question. And we first saw this on the Rick Steves Show, and I was waiting for it to happen. And it didn't happen until almost the last day of our trip. So Rick Steves shows, he said, well, there's one aspect in Egypt that is, I guess it is new, unique, and I've never seen it other places. Now, maybe it will become more popular because it's a heck of an idea. But in Egypt, because there's so many of these different ships and different size ships, there's no big cruise ships with thousands of people because the Nile can't handle that, but there's a lot of river cruise types of ships and smaller ships and ferries and different things that, you know, that have people on them. And if you're on the ship in the middle of the water, you're, as I said before, you're a captive audience. These salespeople get on a rowboat. They pack their rowboat with all their wares, mostly material things, tablecloths, dresses, T-shirts, you know, Afghan type of things, beach towels, you name it. Tablecloth, mostly, you know, fabric kind of things. And they will row up to the ship or the boat, and they will tie themselves, they will tie their boat with a rope onto the boat, onto something hanging. And many times the boat is moving. Now, you know, those river boats and the ships, they don't really, they're not really flying that fast. And especially the Nile is not that wide. It's wide, but it's not like an ocean. I mean, you look from side to side and you can, you know, you can see people's faces in many, from the ship in many cases. You know, it's just not like it's that, it's not is as wide as you may have thought. It's not narrow, but it's not an ocean away. And so Rick Steves is showing how these and they call them pirates, which is funny. Now, they're not really pirates, I don't know. I guess are they pillaging, maybe in some way? So they row their boats up to the ships, the cruise ships. They tie their rowboats to the side of the ship, something that's hanging from them, and then they start to yell at the at the tourists, you know, on the decks or on their balconies or whatever, you know, and they show, okay, look at this. Hey, hey, look at lady. Hey, lady. Hey, mister. Hey, mister. And there's a tablecloth or there's a dress or there's a T-shirt or there's a shirt or there's some kind of a thing. And they show you from their boat. So you're looking down over the railing. And they're standing in their little boats. There's two guys usually, sometimes three, but mostly two. These are not big. They're just little rowboats. But they're filled with all these items, all these products, all these wares of theirs. Many of these things that you can see when you go to the, you know, the clothing types of things that you could see when you go to the bazaars. Nothing hard, no trinkets. You know, they're not selling any pyramids or anything. Because the main reason that they're not selling any kind of trinkets or anything hard is because of the way they will sell this to you. They obviously are not allowed to come on the boat. So the way that they first show you from a distance, they get your attention, so they're screaming, and there's usually about two or three of them on each side. So they're actually battling against themselves too. And but what they do is, okay, I say, oh, you know, maybe he's holding up a tablecloth, right? Some Egyptian silk tablecloth. Who knows what it is, right? Maybe it's just some beach towel with you know, King Tut's face, you know, death mask picture on it or something. So it could be something that's fairly nice in quality, and some things that are just, you know, a T-shirt, whatever. So they'll show it to you from the boat down in the water. And most of these boats have several decks. So you're always looking over the railing and looking down over at them while they're looking at you. So they're not, they're not right on you because they're way down on the water. Most of the ships have four decks. So it's a pretty high ship. So they will show you what they want, you know, or what you, you know, to show you what these different things, or to tap into their usual Egyptian aggressive sales technique. This is where the interesting and fun part happens. They will put this, say it's a tablecloth, they will put it in a clear plastic bag, and they will throw it from their rowboat in the water up to the top of the deck or wherever you're at. And all of a sudden you're standing there and this thing comes, this projectile comes flying and lands on the ground if you're not paying attention, and it might hit you, but it's cloth. So even if it hits you, it's not going to hurt you that much. That's why I think they probably don't sell trinkets. Because if you threw a pointy pyramid up from there, you could take somebody's eye out, kid. You know, if you threw a Nefertiti or a King Tut or a Ramses statue or a Horus statue or an Isis statue, you could hurt somebody as you throw this thing up. It gains a lot of velocity. But if you've got a T-shirt or a dress or a tablecloth or a shirt or whatever, it's big. So even if you're not paying attention, you can't help but see this thing coming. And a lot of times, you know, there will be people around that are bartering with them. But sometimes they do throw it farther and it goes over their heads and it does hit the deck. So you could be sitting at a table somewhere and all of a sudden this thing comes flying at you. So then you have to get a little more acclimated, like, okay, wait a minute, I better prepare for this. So Rick Steves showed this on his show. He called them these pirates. And then it seems as if the cruise ships, they either slow down for this or they I don't know if they encourage it, but they certainly indulge it. Mm-hmm. Because we then anchored for about 40 minutes. And that allowed them then to really sell their wares for like 40 minutes. So they went to both sides and the back and the front of the ship, and they're always trying to find people. And they're so, you know, because the day, so I was surprised because, so I saw this and I said, geez, I wonder if we're going to see those pirates, because you see this on the Rick Steves thing and it looks very interesting. And it's like, well, that would be kind of strange. I wonder what that's like, you know. So we were on the ship up and, you know, up and down the Nile for, what, 6.5, maybe 7 days. And we hadn't seen them. And I was even asking a couple of days, you know, I haven't seen those pirate guys. Now, for the most part, we sailed in the late afternoon or in the evening to get to our next destination the next day. But we did have 1 or 2 days where we kind of had a very nice, relaxing kind of sailing day for about 4 or 5 hours. 1 day, maybe 2 or 3 hours. But this 1 day, the day before we were going to leave, we had this major sailing day where we were pretty much on the water for about 6 or 7 or 8 hours. So it was very nice. It was very relaxing because we had really been on the move from when we started in Israel, you know, a week and a half before that. So we were on the go every day. So it was nice as we were, as the trip was ending, maybe the day before, that we just had this nice sea day where we just could relax. They have little activities on the ship if you'd like to go, but for the most part, you can just kind of relax. So I was up on that deck from early in the morning, and I mean, there's times when I had it all to myself, and but then as the day went on, more people came up, and you met people, you're talking to everybody, and so all of a sudden, I said to my wife, I said, "Geez, you know, we haven't seen those pirate guys that we saw on Rick Steves." And I was saying, geez, I wonder if, because we went on a Viking tour, and I said, wow, I wonder maybe Viking, you know, maybe they don't come to the Viking ship. Maybe, you know, Viking, since it's such a major line and a prominent line, maybe they don't feel that they want their guests to be subject to this. I mean, it's certainly an interesting aspect that seems to be very specific to Egypt. But as I said, you know, we had been encountered every moment we were on land in Egypt. Every moment we were on land, people were constantly coming up to you trying to sell something. I mean, everywhere you went, even if you weren't in a market. They were carrying things, beads and jewelry or T-shirts. I mean, everywhere you went. So by the 7th day or so, it you know, even if you enjoyed that, even if you enjoy the bartering or you did like the shopping of it, I think even the most enthusiastic shoppers were getting a little tired of it because it really is intensive. Like I said, for me, that wasn't my cup of tea at all. But I thought, well, geez, we haven't seen those pirates. Those guys that hook up to the side of the boat and throw the shirts or the dresses or stuff in the plastic bags up onto the deck. We haven't seen those. I wonder, I said, wow, I wonder maybe, you know, they know that they, you know, because there's, you know, it says Viking, you know, on the ship. I said, well, maybe Viking has so much pull that they've made it clear that they don't want their guests to be subjected to this, because I couldn't understand why. I mean, Rick Steves made it sound like this was commonplace in Egypt on the Nile, and yet here we were 7 or 8 days in, and we hadn't seen any even a hint of it. Well, I was in for something. I mean, literally, maybe 2 hours after I said that, as a passing comment. Sure enough, in the distance, I see this little quasi-fleet, if you will, of rowboats making their way toward the ship. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, I bet you those are the salespeople. And now a lot of people on the cruise on the ship, they did not know that this was done. And they said, well, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, well, you know, on Rick Steves. I said, these guys, it looks like it, these guys, because they're all coming at, they're coming all toward our ship here. And we were one of the only, in this one little area of where we were on the Nile, there weren't any other ships. I said, they're coming to our ship. I said, these guys are going to be selling stuff. They're like, how, what do you mean? So I explained everything. Sure enough, our ship was moving, and they came up to the side of it, and they were yelling, oh, hey, ho, 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 you know, to get your attention. As I said, this was a sea day, so we, you know, people were out on the weather. We had just fantastic weather every day. So people were out on the deck enjoying the cruising and looking at the sights and both sides as we went to different cities and throughout. So there were towns, and then there was farmland, and it was just beautiful. So people were out on the deck. As I said before, we didn't really have a lot of time to see those kind of sights because we were always going on tours during the day and coming back at night, and then it gets dark and you eat and you go to sleep. So this was a nice opportunity for us to get some cruise time in, a very laid-back day. You're looking at the sights as you cruise by. Everybody's has some drinks, so it's a very, you know, kind of just a lazy day, which everybody could use after, you know, either 7 or 8 days for those who just had the cruise, and those of us had 4 extra days in Israel. So it was a welcome kind of relaxing day. Perfect atmosphere for these guys, right? Because everybody's just kind of, you know, sitting around and got a couple of drinks, and you're laughing, and you're just kind of cruising and soaking it all in, and you're very laid back. And all of a sudden, these guys are there. And even though you've been shopping, you know, if you wanted to, especially, you could have been shopping for 7 days in a row. And so, but this was a different kind of shopping. So it's unique. It's a novelty. And so initially, of course, you're just interested in it. And like I said, I was aware of it. Most of the people were not. My wife and I were aware of what this was going on. Sure enough, there they came. And then our ship was moving very slow initially. And they did hook on. At least one of them did. But then we kind of went to the side. We didn't necessarily dock. We weren't at a dock, but we moved to a side, and then we anchored. And I don't know if we did this on purpose, or maybe this is just they take advantage of this. But we had to go through a lock. You have several locks on the rivers with the different levels. And we had to go through a lock. And so there's all, you know, with all the ships that are coming through, every ship, there's only one lock. You know, there's several. It's like a toll booth along the river at different spots. But every ship has to go through the same one. So there's a line to some extent. You have to wait. So our captain, our ship must have got word that, hey, you know, it's going to take at least an hour or 45 minutes. So they kind of just, rather than just, you know, so they anchored. Well, these guys must know that. That's where they probably do. They probably hang out by the lock because they know these ships, there's always a line and there's always a wait. So once again, captive audience. These people ain't going nowhere. They're not going to get, they can't get off the ship. They're in the river. And yet the ship can't keep going forward anymore because they have to go through this lock. So they've got a captive audience for a good 45 minutes. So most likely that's why we hadn't seen them, because for the most part, we didn't really go through a lot of locks during the day. We were always, out on a, you know, we were sailing at night for the most part. So there they were. So now it's even easier. Now they're totally, in fact, some of these guys then, when the ship was, our ship was, you know, was kind of anchored for like 40 minutes, they didn't even bother to hook onto the boat. They were just in their boats. They're a little farther away, so it gives them a better vantage point to see the people. So instead of, because you're hooked, and if you're tied onto the boat, you got to look straight up. It's not that easy, although it is easier to probably throw it. But not if you want to get some nice arc on it. I got to say, these guys had some pretty good arms. They could throw. They could toss. They're probably very good at jarts. Remember jarts? They were very good. There's always very good loft on their tosses. Good arc. Good, you know, so this way you don't hit people. So they would toss those things up. And so all of a sudden, you know, when our ship anchored, oh, now we were in full kind of hard sell mode. So now they're on both sides of the ship, different sales guys. They all basically had the same stuff for the most part. And, you know, they're so, hey, lady, hey, mister, hey, lady, hey, mister. And they've got the, you know, they've got the big tablecloth, and they unravel it and to show you the whole thing or the T-shirt or the thing. And then they said, and so people say, oh, no, no, no. Well, they don't take no for an answer. There's no such thing as no. Even if you say no, they'll show you this. Well, what about this? And what about this? And everybody says no, no, no. But they don't take no for an answer. They don't take no for an answer on land, and they don't take no for an answer on the water. So if you say no, that just spurs them on even more. Now they're even more motivated to sell you. And this is where their little shtick comes in. So they will then take that same tablecloth that they had completely unfurled, and they'll roll it up and fold it up, throw it in a plastic bag, and all of a sudden, you're sitting there. I mean, if you're paying attention to them over the railing, and then you could see this thing come, and they'll throw it to you because maybe you don't want it, but then you become a quasi salesman for them on the ship because they toss this thing. So you can't, I mean, no one's not going to catch it. I mean, there's this object flying at you. This projectile is coming at you. I mean, just out of self-defense, you're going to take it. Now, once again, it's fabric. It's not hard. But, you know, some of it, I mean, if you got hit in the head with it, if you weren't paying attention, it wouldn't hurt, but it certainly would startle you. So the people that are up against the railing are the first ones that, you know, are either saying yes or no, no, no. But once again, that's not stopping them. So if they don't get any initial nibbles or initial interest, then that's when the throwing starts. That's when the hard sell begins. First, they start, you know, they show you the stuff. Hey, 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 hey. And then everybody says no. It's like, okay, well, that they don't take no for an answer because this ship's going to be there for 40 minutes. They know probably how long they're going to be there. So they're going to try to get that $5 out of you one way or the other. So they start tossing these things. And so, as I said, the people near the railing who are talking to them or looking at some of them, they will catch them, and then they will say, oh, okay, wait a minute now, does anybody want this? And they'll take it out of the bag, and now they'll your fellow passengers, your shipmates, if you will, are becoming salespeople now for the guy in the boat. In fact, one guy, he started to, that's all he was doing then. He was catching them all and saying, okay, here, I have a tablecloth, anybody want a tablecloth? And then, whoop, here's another one comes. Whoop, oh, okay, here's a beach towel with Nefertiti on it. Oh, here's a man's shirt. Here's a man, you know. And I said, are you getting a piece of this now? Are you getting a cut of the profits or what? And one time, I leaned over and just saw to try to see what was going on. But, you know, a lot of other people were just very captivated and having fun with them. No, no, no. My wife was there. No, 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 you know. But they were still throwing stuff at her. You know, and at one point, this guy threw one, and it flew over the railing, well over the railing. And I was kind of sitting in the middle at a table, and I had just gotten up, and I looked up, and here's this thing, and boom, I snatched it. They're like, wow, nice catch, you know. And so I'm like, does anybody want this? No. So then I'm like, phew. So I just threw it back over the railing. Because you, I mean, so if you don't want it, then you throw it back. And so it's in a plastic bag, and so it won't hurt anybody when they toss it up on the deck. And then as you throw it back down, hopefully if their rowboat is tied to the side of the boat, then they're right next to it, so you just drop it and it will go into their boat. As I said, some of these guys, when our boat was anchored, they didn't even tie to the boat, so they were just kind of floating, and then you had to throw it to them. And once again, the advantage of the plastic bag, if you miss the boat, it's in a plastic bag, so it won't get ruined. And so I just took the thing because it sort of hit me, and I'm like, geez, enough of this. So I just kind of looked at it and threw it back over, and I missed the boat. Everybody's like, oh, you missed the boat. You missed the boat. And I was like, okay. First of all, you know, they had a big long stick. They go over and I get it. It was fine. Secondly, I'm up four decks on a cruise ship here. I'm not kind of worried about that. I didn't ask for this thing to come flying at me to begin with. You know, I'm like, give me a break. But I don't know if anybody, I think one or two people may have bought something. They didn't really sell a lot because the disadvantage was that by the time they came to our ship on the last day, I mean, people were pretty much, you know, they bought everything they needed. So I would suggest that those guys try to hit the ships earlier rather than later, because by the time, I don't remember, I mean, they were there for a good 45 minutes, if not even, well, probably about 45 minutes. But I don't remember seeing a lot of people buying a lot of stuff. They certainly were trying their best. I had to give them, as I said before, A for effort, A for ingenuity, A for tenacity, A for perseverance. But I'm not sure how many things they actually sold. Because by that time, everybody was bought out. I mean, they bought everything for the last 5 or 6 days. We were constantly walking past markets, every site we saw. And the things that they had to sell were not unique. They were what everyone else had. So I guess it was just for those who, you know, sometimes a lot of people will not shop during the trip. They will wait until the last couple of days and say, okay, you know what? I haven't bought anything and I need to get maybe a t-shirt for my, you know, grandson or whoever it is. Or, oh, this looks nice. I haven't bought anything. I should get some kind of a keepsake or remembrance. And they will buy closer to the end of the trip rather than either the beginning of the trip or throughout the trip. A lot of times, you know, you'll say, well, let me, I don't want to buy something at the beginning, because what if there's something really I like, I see later, and I spend a lot of money at the beginning. So there's a lot of different ways to approach this. But I didn't see a lot of people buying things on our ship. As I told you in some earlier podcasts too, we only had like 50 people on the ship. It was a smaller ship. And so we didn't have hundreds of people. There was, you know, 50 people at, you know, so who knows how many people were actually on the deck at the time. So they didn't really make a lot of sales, but they certainly did provide some interesting entertainment, and it was fun for a while. But then the problem was I think if they would have sold some stuff, then they wouldn't have been as tenacious. And the problem was, you know, they didn't want to go away empty handed. So, you know, even, you know, I mean, for me, I saw it for 5 minutes. I saw it on the television show before. Okay, it was funny. You go back, you're bartering. No, no, no. You throw it back. Everybody laughs. Ha, ha, ha. For me, that was about 3 minutes of interest and entertainment. And then I was done with it. Then it was just, I had to duck. You know, it was more of a nuisance because these things were flying over the railings and like, you know, landing near me. And then, you know, but some people were into it for a good 20 minutes, but they would not leave because they weren't making any sales. So they just kept throwing these things. And it was like, okay, enough now. No, we told you no, no, no. And they would not, as I said before, they do not take no for an answer. So I think they kept, you know, that then it started to get like people, everyone just moved away from the railing and lost interest. But they kept throwing the stuff, even when people were not near the railings. They just kept throwing the stuff. And so you had to throw it back. I mean, that's part of the, you know, the little social contract here. I mean, in theory, we could have kept it, right? I mean, if you really wanted to, but you're not going to do that to these guys. So now you have to, you know, they force you to engage with them, even though this is long past the novelty, long past the entertainment value. Now it's becoming a nuisance. At least it was for me. And I could see some other people. It's like, okay, once people moved off the railing, you knew they were done. But these guys were not done, and they kept throwing this stuff and throwing it until finally they got the clue. It's like, no, we don't. In fact, I think that the guy finally says, look, does anybody want anything? No. Okay, nobody wants anything. We're done. And they still were throwing stuff. So once again, I give them a lot of credit, and it's a hell of a way to make a living, I'll tell you that. But I'm sure that over the course of a day, with all the ships, they saw us for, what, 35, 40 minutes? If they do that for 8 hours a day, I bet you they make, you know, that's the funny thing. All these places, you know, the prices are very low, at least right now, because the exchange rate was in our favor. So the prices were not that high. So I have to think that these guys in any place, whether it's these guys on the rowboat or the guys that have, you know, shops in these markets and the bazaars, they have to work on volume because they're not making it really on high-priced individual things. So they have to make it on volume. And I bet you these guys in the rowboat, I bet you they make out, I don't know if they're living in mansions, but, you know, I mean, they're basically probably staying in the same area. They're not really rowing all that much in terms of physical exertion. And they're tossing these things up, so they're providing some entertainment. And, you know, on a bigger ship with more people, with 150 people, I bet you they don't do bad. They must, or they wouldn't be keep doing it, right? So that was really one interesting aspect of the trip to Egypt that I was aware of, but I didn't, you know, until you really are in the middle of it and you see it happen and get engaged in it. It was kind of fun, like I said, even for me, even though my tolerance rate was much lower than the average person. It was kind of cool, and it was nice. It was, you did get a chance to once again interact with them and have jokes, and they were laughing too. They get it. You know, oh, yes, no, you want this one, right? But boom, and it comes flying at you in a bag, you know. No, I don't want that one. No, you take a look at it. Boom, you know. So, I mean, you know, they're using all the same sales techniques. The only difference is they're throwing it at you from a rowboat five decks down, as opposed to either, you know, pushing you into their store or putting something in your hand. They're throwing it at you. It's a whole different kind of sales technique, but still effective, I think. So that's what really made the trip kind of fun too, is that in the midst of all this this majesty and these structures and these temples and these pyramids and these tombs and all these artifacts that we saw in Egypt, it was awe-inspiring every day. And everyone had a different story to tell, and they were all similar and yet all different. But then it was something like this that was so simple and so human, and yet just as memorable, just as fun as seeing some of these amazing sights that we saw. And that's, I think, once again, that makes travel so interesting, is what you encounter when you leave home, and especially when you leave our country, and you see the way different people live and their cultures and their beliefs and their likes and their foods and their architecture and everything about their lifestyles. It's baffling to think of all the different people and all the different cultures all around the world, that somehow we are all coexisting because they are so different in many ways. And yet, for all of our differences, there are still those same basic similarities too. And that's the lesson I think that's fun to learn when you travel, is that as different as places are and different as people are, they're all the same. And as crazy as it is going to a car dealership, and I'm not just picking on car dealers, but that's, you know, a very common kind of place where you go to buy a specific kind of product, and you barter and you dicker with the guys, and you go back and forth. So here was a floating car dealership, but instead of cars, it was tablecloths and T-shirts and beach towels. Only in Egypt. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 357. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Mister, do you like this tablecloth, mister?